It's Thursday, the 7th of September, and you're listening to the Game Grin Grincast. I'm your host, Hamiltonius, and joining me for this mini-pod are Ace.
Hello.
Cal.
Good evening.
And MZ.
Hello.
As it's a mini-pod, because we're down half a team, essentially, everyone's abandoned us. Because they don't like us anymore. We've had various fallouts and we've started some beef. I think Cal's working on a diss track as we speak. So look out for that.
Like we're going to sickest beats.
Can you actually do that? Please?
Only the sickest beats.
I probably could actually. If I could find some.
Mate,
some
if we
snippets.
Could do some Grincast beef with like everyone records a diss track.
Yes.
That would be the whitest thing.
I am so collaborating with Cal.
That'd be super
collaborating.
Hi. I don't know what a diss track is.
Video games, by the way. Yeah, so it's a mini pod, so we'll be covering just some choice news from this week for about half an hour. A nice little short snippet for your lovely ears, listeners. First off, we're going to... Well, I say it's a light topic, but are games journalists awful? Yes, is the answer. And has always been the answer. So we talked about Cuphead, I believe, a few pods ago. A nice little cartoony side-scrolling game that has a high level of difficulty. Recently, a video by VentureBeat journalist, Dean Takahashi, he's a lead writer, was put on YouTube of him essentially failing at playing Cuphead at Gamescom. And even though he said in his article straight away, he was like, I suck at Cuphead, this video is me being awful at it. Immediately sparked a probably unwarranted backlash from people talking about how games journalists, so if you can't play video games, then why are you a games journalist? And I mean, to be fair, the video was hilarious. He spent about 10 minutes trying to get past the tutorial and learning how to jump and dash. But yeah, it was picked up by Ian Miles Chong, who's a rather contrarian person on Twitter, saying games journalists are incredibly bad at video games. It's painful to watch this. How do they think they're qualified to write about games? Considering Ian writes for The Sun, I don't know. You should not be throwing stones at glass houses, really.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's been likened to the Polygon Doom video, and it's it sparked up this massive debate again about, you know, it's like people are taking this one example and turning it into something rather absurd, really. But yeah, so we're all rubbish. I mean...
Well, everyone is good at different games. Are you supposed to be, like, multi-talented at all of the genres?
My issue isn't that he was awful at it. My issue is that he didn't read the on-screen prompts.
Fair enough.
Well, it went further than that as well, because he consistently ran into enemies and died, fell down holes, failed to follow the right directions on the screen. But... Again, it's one person playing one game and one recording, and somehow that's indicative of the entire video games industry. Who'd be a games journalist, eh?
The thing is, like, I can understand some people's point of view where if they want to see gameplay of... It's a typical thing of the YouTube showcasing. You don't usually go on there to watch someone play a game. You watch someone to be good at the game. That's where you got all these montages and... all that shit. So a lot of people half expect if you upload a video of someone playing a game, people expect it to be good, not someone failing, unless it's for humour.
Yeah, but it's probably got a shit ton of views, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably, yeah, it's like a product of streamer culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, similarly, if you asked a streamer to write a 1,500-word review of a video game in a week, they probably wouldn't be able to do it, so...
Yeah, that's the same. I mean, if it was a game I was looking forward to, say it was Battlefield, for example, and I was waiting for someone's particular review, I'd rather look upon people's reviews knowing that they have had experience with the previous titles, they've played the previous titles, they know how to play an FPS shooter. I wouldn't maybe read a review by someone who does fashion. Fashion? Fashion? Fashion. I didn't say the word properly.
Fashion.
Fashion is the only cure. It only leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, exactly. No, someone who does articles and reviews of fashion clothing and everything like that, I wouldn't really read a review from them if they did Battlefield. But I might just sort of out of curiosity to see the opinion of someone who doesn't play those games.
Why? Sometimes they're the least biased.
Yeah, I know that. But I'm saying in general, maybe be okay, pretty good at playing FPS games.
Yeah, but like I'm absolutely a terrible gamer at most genres that include any kind of, you know, coordination. And like it will take me a while, but with practice I'll generally get pretty good. Like I was absolutely awful at CSGO. I'm still awful at CSGO, but I don't come last anymore. And I don't know, I think some people just aren't built for certain genres, and doesn't negate them from having opinions or being able to have a go.
No, absolutely not. But it's just me in general maybe being a bit biased, as in, like, if it was a particular game that I'm very interested in and want to get, I'd be more inclined to read reviews by those who have experience and knowledge of the series.
Yeah. But then you have experience and knowledge of the series as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
I get where you're coming from, because, like, for example, with Dragon Age, you know, I wouldn't read a review of Dragon Age 4 from someone that had never played the previous games, because I'd be like, fuck off, you don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get you.
Why?
But if it was a... Go on.
Sorry, no, go on, Cal, and then I'll wrap up.
I was going to say, but if it was an opinion piece, not the actual review of the game, but someone's opinion piece, like the So I Tried series we do, which can be found on our Game Grin website, and on there you've got people who've never heard of these games, never really played the games before, and they write an opinion about, you know, did I like it, did I enjoy it? Those are entertaining. But if that person then reviewed the actual game, knowing that, I'd be like, maybe not. I'll look at some other reviews.
I think, sort of sum up, it's one of those things that people, and I've said this to many colleagues of mine in the journalism industry on the other side, and said, you know, who'd want to be a video games journalist? These people, people who get this much scrutiny, we don't get paid much. They do it for the love of the medium, and the more they're berated, the more they're forced out of this industry, the worse it's going to get in quality anyway, because they're going to be people who are worse at it being employed after them. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and I think, like we said, it's a product of streamer culture and people wanting the best gamer or the best person playing the game to be amazing at it all of a sudden for no real reason. And I think the more this continues, the more we'll see truly talented people move away from the gaming industry. We're going to shift on to... I want to get MZ's opinion on this, because Chucklefish, the publisher and development supporter of Stardew Valley, appear to have teased that they're making a witch slash wizard school life RPG in a similar sort of style to Stardew, by the looks of it. These are also the people who made Starbound as well. So there's a little bit of excitement going on Twitter, because it's not really a genre you think about unless you played the old Harry Potter games on, like, Game Boy Color. But yeah, what's your opinion of this, MC?
More excited about this than the new gin bar that's opening nearby.
So go on, explain.
So very, very excited. I mean, there's... In the past, there's been lots of, like, if you look at Stardew Valley, there's been lots of that similar game, but it's always been on handheld stuff, like Harvest Moon and that sort of thing. But with Steam, there's been kind of the ability to open that up to PC gamers, which is awesome, because I've never really been into the tiny screen shitness. So I'm happy to be able to witness it in all its pixel glory on an actual proper screen. And I found, Stardew Valley is just, it's such a great game because it's so accessible to so many different ages. My son, who's 5, was massively into it. And if I recall, your mum was really into it as well, Alex, is
yeah.
that right?
I mean, yeah. it's an understatement.
I didn't know Dominoid was in this pod. Your mum?
Your mum. Yeah, but look, it is one of those games, which is great because it appeals to such a large age range of people, and it doesn't have that kind of, it's not so specific as others. And then you take in something like Harry Potter-esque theme, and that just makes it all the more exciting, because you've got these games where you can just put the hours in, and it's easy and it's relaxing. Well, I wouldn't say it's easy. I mean, if you've ever tried fishing in Stardew Valley, then that's not easy. But, you know, there's just so much to do and explore, and there's no kind of pressure. And it's just fun. And, you know, I think that's kind of the essence of games, really. And to be honest, it's there's a lot of humor to be found in these games where it's not voice acted, and I wouldn't generally say that, but for small budget games, it means that you can get in, you know, some really great humor, and you're not having to spend loads.
Because it's a slice of life / school life RPG, that immediately makes me think of Persona. So I'm going to throw this over to Ace, the only other person in this podcast who's played Persona 5, and say, would a game like this interest you, Ace, given how you play Persona 5?
I haven't read very much into it yet, because there isn't much to read. But from the concept, yeah, it sounds like something I'd check out.
There's nothing quite like building up certain random stats over loads of school days, and then leaving the game and wondering why on earth you spent the last 3 hours studying in a virtual world when you should be studying in the real world.
Because you were terrible at studying in the real world, at least you can be good at it in game.
Mate, talking to a bloke with a master's degree.
All right, show off.
On from that massive boast to something that you shouldn't boast about, which is Denuvo has been cracked again. Denuvo? Oh.
It's whatever you want it to be.
Dunno.
Oh. Dunno. it's not. Sonic Mania this time. People were a bit annoyed that it was announced that it would be using Denuvo anti-tamper tech, and it got cracked fairly quickly.
And it's not the first game that got fairly quickly cracked.
It's
not the fastest one, apparently. Tekken 7 was the fastest.
It took 8 days for Sonic Mania, and it took 2 days for whatever. I don't recall if they used Denuvo, but for Life is Strange Before the Storm.
It took like a week for Resident Evil 7 as well, I think. Yeah, well, that made news.
There was a meme posted in a subreddit that deals with the cracking scene, making fun of a repacking group that's gone through the hassle of repacking Resident Evil 7, and then they've gone and announced a new DLC and a gold edition of the game.
I don't know why companies insist on putting it in when, in a number of video games cases, once it's been cracked, they've immediately removed it again. It's been for Rime, Doom, Hitman, and Mass Effect all removed it as well.
I think Doom was voluntarily removed. It wasn't cracked and then removed. It wasn't actually cracked, I believe. It was after like a year after the game came out, or like 8-10 months or something like that. They updated it, removed the DRM, and reduced the price of the game. And that way, all of a sudden, you get it stupidly cheap.
It was for patch 666, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
Or
yeah,
but 6.66 or whatever.
Yeah, they did a big special announcement because they decided to give all the multiplayer content away for free as well.
So why continue with it? Why do you think you're not a studio exec, Cal, but why?
Because they seem to think that if they put this DRM on there, then you know, they won't get pirated. But if anything, that kind of drives the pirate scene.
It's more about the principle.
It's a challenge. And it is also like it makes it it's anti-consumer at the same time, because it's the DRM on like Steam and Origin are pretty decent. If it's like a Steam game or an Origin title, they're usually pretty secure. But then you've got third-party games, even though it still uses Steam's DRM because you have to fucking install it on Steam. It's got this extra layer on there, which is really annoying. And sometimes it also affects the performance of the title, because it's having to have this constant checking.
Just Cause fucking 3.
Yeah. And it happened to Rime as well. A lot of people complained that because of the DRM, it was causing performance problems. So it's so anti-consumer.
I think the thing is that the board of directors of the publishers demand that they take every action they can against pirates, and it protects their day one sales, and that's about it.
Yeah, it does, pretty much. If any, you know, so it gives them like a weak head start before the crackers. I mean, it's like, even though PC pirating is like always said, oh, don't, PC gamers are all pirates and things like that. But the most pirating I've had in terms of games has got to be from the console. Because when I was younger, I knew loads of people that had chipped PS1s. And we all used to get these games like, oh yeah, check it out, we've got PS1 games. Didn't know anyone who didn't have a chip PS1. Then the PS2 came out. Sort of same situation, give it a couple of months. Eventually, those got chipped as well. So I knew more people and I had more experience with pirated games from console as opposed to PC.
Yeah, I was going to say, from my limited perspective of the internet, I don't think piracy, I mean, it must be as rife as, you know, for them to be doing it this much, but I feel like it's not as prevalent as it was a few years ago.
No, it's just because services have become easier. You know the first thing, like you buy a new PC and you play games, so one of the first things you do is install Steam. And there's so many free-to-play games these days, people are just playing those, or they have just the one game that they only play, Battlegrounds, or Counter-Strike, or Dota. And they sort of don't really bother. When it becomes to big titles and big AAA games, most people, there's so many games that people actually wait for a Steam sale before deciding, you know, sod it, I'm going to fucking pirate it.
A portion of the pirates as well isn't even people who don't want to buy the game. It's people who have bought the game, but the DRM is causing hassle, and the cracked version doesn't have the DRM, so they've got a copy in their Steam library, but they can't install it because the performance is rubbish.
Mm-hmm. And there's also restrictions in certain countries as well. So it's obviously lots of Eastern European countries, or even like China, where they won't be able to get these Western games, so they would just pirate them. And actually, loads of the DRM cracking teams, and I don't know, at least a couple, are based in China. For the people.
I think it's also people like to try before they buy, and I don't know people, but I've seen online people saying that they like to they pirate a game, and then if they like it, they pay for the full release.
Mm-hmm. I used to do that.
Is that a product of, do you think, just the fact, and we've spoken about this in the pod before, about the fact that demos are basically non-existent anymore? If people had demos, maybe there'd be less piracy?
I feel it would be good for, like, Origin's doing a pretty good job of it at the moment, because they're, all right, fair enough, you have to pay for it, which is fucking stupid, but their trial offer, where they're doing, like, you sign up to Origin Access and you get the vault, but you also get 10 hours free trial on new games. And, well, it has its, you know, benefits, but it also has its negative impact, because I think that's what decided a lot of people not to buy Mass Effect Andromeda, because of this 10-hour trial. But at the same time, I think it's good for indie developers, because if they want to get more people to be interested in their game, and if they share it on a torrent site and people buy it, or people download it and people download it, then it might encourage them to, maybe, you know what, I'm going to support this guy, I really like his work, and they go. And I think some developers have already, like, actually put their game on Pirate Bay just as an experiment. for more widespread exposure.
There's also the occasional indie developer who will release their own game onto a torrent site with certain files altered, so it sends anonymous data back to say it's been downloaded X amount of times.
Oh yeah, and there's also I remember reading this ages ago on like the cheaters, what happens to cheaters, and there's a Japanese game, one of them sexy Japanese games, and if you were caught pirated, then
aren't
if you play
the Japanese game sexy?
I don't suppose so, yeah, but this one in particular is rather nasty. What it actually does is if you download a pirated version, it has a virus in it, and when you play the game, the virus will then infect the PC and it will encrypt your files. And the only way to have your files encrypted was to take a picture of yourself and write an apology note and then post it online to the game's forums, and then they will give you a key to unlock your thing.
That's awesome.
Basically, to make you shame you. I'll see if I can find it.
Locking the game files or locking files on the person's computer?
It was a virus, like a ransomware.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Surely that's massively illegal.
It's Japan.
So is piracy.
Yes, true, exactly.
Yeah, I suppose, but, you know, eye for an eye.
Well, it's like there's a pirate, develop your own game, one of them gaming simulator games, and if you download a pirated copy, then in the game itself, when you start developing your game will then get pirated within the game. So then you'll start losing money and your company would have to close down because people pirated your game in the game.
It's a bit like a more advanced version of Theme Hospital, where it would go, hospital administrator is cheating.
Yeah, exactly.
Surely if they really wanted to make an impact on these people downloading these like sexy Japanese games, just put a file into it that pixelates all the images.
I thought they already were all pixelated.
I don't know.
I think as a standard, a lot of them are pixelated, yeah.
You guys are the experts.
Hentai is anything to go by.
Well, we'll move swiftly on from that one. To something a bit more somber, actually. So Warner Brothers and Monolith are in trouble for a piece of DLC that's coming out for Shadow of War, the upcoming Lord of the Rings themed game and sequel to Shadow of Mordor. They announced they were releasing a piece of DLC for their sadly deceased executive producer from Shadow of Mordor, Michael Forgey. He died last year from a form of cancer known as glioblastoma. So they announced a DLC character for Shadow of War named Forthog Orcslayer, who appears when the main character is about to be killed and says some candid lines and is also generally quite a cool character. Now, they said the DLC would be $5 and $3.50 from every purchase would go to 4G's family through till December 31st, 2019. They got a lot of good press from that, but people noticed that in the fine print of the DLC, it said that offer would only work in the US and also not in Alabama, Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, Mississippi, and South Carolina. The explanation is that there's some legal issues about taxes and how you can use the money to pay for other people's issues in those states. But so people essentially said, so you're still making money off that though. Warner Brothers has come out on Twitter to say that neither them nor Monolith will make a profit on the DLC no matter where it's sold in the world, but they also didn't say what they're going to do with the money anyway. So it's a bit of another storm in a moderately sized teacup.
That is somber.
So it's got a, I mean, at first, people were like, "Yeah, this is a really great action, a really good gesture." And then, when they read the small print, they quickly turned sour.
It's like the Pepsi ad. Think about it. Everyone so looked so happy. They thought, "Oh, we're making a moral stand here. You know, look how happy it is, diverse, and everyone's together." And there's of course the shitstorm because obviously, you know. You can't really solve riots with a can of Pepsi. So it's kind of that sort of sense where you thought maybe the company had like some sort of good heartness, thinking we're doing a great job for this family. He was a real respected person. Fucking fuck cancer, absolutely. So it's perfect. You know, when you tell cancer to fuck off, we'll give this money away. But then obviously you think people are still going to buy it because it's one of those in-game characters that people would be drawn towards getting because he's a pretty decent addition. So well-specced. But at the same time, it's also like, what are you going to do the money with? You know? What the fuck are you going to do that money with? Give it to charity.
I think that would be the best PR move for them. I think essentially what they didn't do was do enough due diligence on the regulatory rules in these separate federal states and also what would happen abroad. 40's family launched a You Caring page a few years ago, I believe. Might have been a few, yeah. But it only raised $130,000 of its $300,000 goal. People have been donating to that in response to the this outcry, trying to donate directly to the family instead of giving the money supposedly to Monolith and Warner Brothers. As well, at the same time, people are saying that it's a bit shitty of them to only donate $350 of the $5, saying why not give the whole $5? But I don't know. MZ, what's your opinion on this?
Well, I don't know the ins and outs of it. I assume that the bit that isn't being paid to, like, isn't being paid to charity or whatever, is that going to pay the staff that worked on it? Or, I mean, I don't know, is that profits that, if it's all profits that they're donating out of the five, then surely, yeah, they should just donate everything, because I don't understand where else the money could go. And kind of in this day and age with the kind of exposure and people's internet hacking abilities, they can't possibly have thought that there would be a scenario in which they would be able to make money off this.
It does seem, like I said, I think they've just made a massive, I mean, I'm a cynical person. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's a really cool gesture. But then, I was immediately like, But also, it does bring up those questions. Like MZ said, why not do the whole five? And hopefully, Warner Brothers and Monolith will come out and shed some light on the situation and let people know exactly what's happening. Because to be honest, the last 2 months or so of Shadow of War's run up has been awful from a PR perspective. They've absolutely crashed and burned.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what MZ said, like, why not give it all to charity? But when you look at it, it's not actually going to a charity, it's going to the family. So maybe there's obviously some law regarding providing donations to a family, and maybe you have to do or be registered
is
as a charity.
Is some of it tax, or I don't know.
It might be tax related, yeah. So I can understand if it's going, because it's going directly to the family, but if it was going to a registered charity, then surely they can just give the whole $5.
But that's something that they need to clear up. Because, yeah, you know, they can't just kind of not properly answer the question. Otherwise, people are going to come to the worst possible assumption because it's the internet.
Yeah. They'd be better off if they said, right, yeah, okay, $350 goes to the family and the remainder $1.50 goes to this registered charity for cancer. You know.
Well, yeah, it's making a lot of people think twice about buying Shadow of War, so we'll see how well they do. I'm sure they'll do fine, though. A quick word before we close out on CD Projekt Red, which is now worth $2 billion. Silly money. Well done, them, I guess.
No surprise. I mean, phenomenal games, Witcher 3 was well-deserved amount of profit they've made.
Have you seen the 10-year anniversary little Witcher video?
Oh, with the quiz and stuff.
Yeah, they did. It was a thank you from CD Projekt Red. It's a 10-year anniversary thank you for The Witcher. And it sort of shows the characters all gathered around in a tavern and have a beer. And it has a Geralt talking about his friends and family.
Nice. You need to link that to me.
I'll send you.
Pronto.
I bet, I'm going to butcher his name. Andrzej Sapkowski?
I think it's Sapkowski.
He's probably understandably bitter at this point. considering he waived away his rights to get money from the Witcher franchise.
He made the first one. He did that for a reason. And also he's involved in the Netflix series, so...
That's true. They're working on Cyberpunk 2077, which has no release date currently, but I'm sure they'll start cranking the hype machine fairly soon. I mean, they can take their time, really, with that amount of money they've got.
They can take their time, and they can also learn from their mistakes about Witcher 3 and the whole dialogue nuisances of people going, oh, it doesn't look like the E3 footage, and it's like, downgrade because of the consoles. It's like, just fuck off. Just... Nobody bitches about GTA 5 or like, Grand Theft Auto. Look about. You know, remember when GTA 5 first got showed off, it didn't look anything like that on the console. It looked very marginally like that console.
You mean when GTA 5 was first shown off for PC or first shown off for console? Because it was like a two-year gap.
Oh, when it was first shown off for console. For the original Xbox and PlayStation 3, it didn't look anything like the trailers.
Well, people have just got to learn the difference between in-game and in-engine.
Yeah, that's what they're showing now.
Right, so that's the end of this little mini-pod. Hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks to Ace, Cal, and MZ, and I've been your host, Hamiltonius. And time for that old spiel. If you want to get in touch with the Grincast, you can find us on Twitter at Grincast or leave a comment below on the Game Grid website, which is www.gamegrid.com. Just look for the little podcast logo. We're usually in trending because we're popular guys. If you want to get in touch with Game Grid on Twitter, it's at Game Grid. If you want to find Game Grid on Facebook and YouTube, again, just search for Game Grid and look for that little smiley face. I also forgot to mention that the Grincast is on iTunes and Stitcher. Fairly easy to find us, just search Grincast. We're up there with all the best video games podcasts. And remember to check out Game On, which has lots of great industry and video game specific magazines. I believe that's everything. We'll be back next week, which is a streamcast. But until then, Game On.